Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lautha, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I am your host, Adam Lautha, and today we have another great guest who's coming to us from halfway around the world. Of course, I'm talking about Matthew Lowe. Matt is a reporter for Business Insider in Singapore. You know, he's Singaporean. He may not sound like it, but he is. And, you know, Matt and I talk periodically about variety of issues related to China, nuclear weapons, and you know, he covers the region and he does a great job on it. And so I thought, hey, who better to give our audience a perspective on, you know, sort of how do the Singaporeans, you know, a small country, an important country at a, you know, really important choke point in you know, for global trade and traffic, and who has, you know, it's a country that has to sort of manage a very precarious relationship with us and the Chinese and the Japanese and everybody else. And so I thought it would be really interesting to hear, you know, the Singaporean perspective. And I think Matt kind of has his, you know, his fingers on that perspective. So with that said, Matt, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Thanks, Adam. This is my first time on a podcast, so this is really awesome.
I've
been looking at the other episodes. I'm really like, it's such an honor to be put on the same platform as your other guests. It's crazy.
Well, thanks for being here. And I mean, you have a unique perspective. You know the region. You're the defense reporter for, you know, for Business Insider in Asia. And you're sort of centrally located in a really important place. And you are a native Singaporean. So you have a, you know, this kind of unique perspective. So for our audience, help our audience sort of understand how a country like Singapore that, you know, I, as a Navy guy, I've worked with the Singaporeans on deployments and, you know, on some other programs that we worked. And, you know, you deal with the Chinese, you trade with the Chinese, you're constantly balancing relationships with all of these competing great powers. So how does Singapore see itself, and how do you manage these difficult relationships, and just give us a perspective on how you see that region?
Yeah, I think the probably something that we have to start off with is the perspective of the Singaporean public. I think a misconception that I get a lot is that because Singapore is roughly 75% ethnic Chinese, that there is some sort of affinity among Singaporeans and the CCP or the government in Beijing, and that can't be further from the case. Like, we have no loyalty to China. We see ourselves as Singaporean, as our country. Like, we see our country as our ancestors building up something for ourselves. So we have no really relation at all politically with the Chinese. But that being said, we do share some cultural values. But, you know, over the course of the last 100 years, a lot has changed in China. And so there's a big gulf between how Singaporean Chinese think and how mainland Chinese people think. So that's something that I really wanted to clear up before we start. I think to look at the Singapore-Chinese relationship, particularly, you have to probably look through three different lenses. The first probably is, I mean, when it comes to the U.S., in general, the thing about our military is it two very vital prongs of the Singaporean military are American. That's our artillery and our Air Force. We joined the F-16 and the F-15 and the F-35 programs, and we use the HIMARS. Those are two really, I would say probably, in my opinion, the most important aspects of our military. So if we ever had to choose, for example, between the U.S. or China, if we had a gun held to our head, for example, I do think that it's very likely that we would not side with the Chinese, because we have our own regional priorities to worry about. And that's what our military is built for. So we do not want to give up, you know, give up any sort of capability that we would need from the Americans. For example, I mean, I know that, like, the F-15, F-16 and whatnot require a lot of maintenance. HIMARS also requires a lot of parts maintenance. So we definitely would keep the Americans, you know, closer in that sense.
So if that's your first prong, so what's prong two and prong three?
Yeah, so the second, I think, is through the public. As I mentioned earlier, I think the public does not, we don't think of ourselves as, you know, at all affiliated with China. But I would say that the Singaporean public in general is not very in tune with things that are happening around the world. And I guess you can say that about a lot of other countries. So there is a risk if, you know, God forbid, war does break out over Taiwan, for example. I think the Americans are going to have their work cut out for them, kind of convincing Singapore and maybe the rest of the world why they should be involved. Because a lot of Singaporeans won't understand that. And I'm sure many, probably a lot of people in America might not understand it as well. But they will, there are Singaporeans who do think that China would probably be in the right to invade Taiwan, but I do not think there's enough mass for there to be some sort of like political shift towards supporting China. But there could be if China gets enough time to work the ground, you know, politically and among our businesses. And that's what our government is really concerned about, which is the third prong, which is, I think, what our government, the way we always see it, is we're really small. So we punch above our weight, but we're still really small. So whenever there's a lot of conflict, especially between the U.S. and China, our two biggest, essentially, partners, right? There's actually not, I don't think there's much we can do. I don't have a lot of insight into how Singapore is dealing with these things diplomatically, but we have always said that we always try to, I guess, toe the line, never really break out and, you know, say our own thing, rock the boat. We just kind of try to keep quiet. That's really our style.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, when you're a relative, you're a city state, essentially, and you're at a key choke point for, you know, global commerce, and you want that commerce to flow because that's the lifeblood of Singapore. So how does Singapore manage, you know, when there are these disputes, you know, and you say, you know, Singapore tries to sort of take a neutral position. So can you maybe delve into that a little bit more? Like, what does that neutrality look like? And then, but you do have these, you know, military ties to the United States. And, you know, for, you know, whenever I would do a Westpac, you know, on a Westpac, we would oftentimes, you pull the, you know, the U.S. Navy pulls into Singapore. And so, you know, you have these strong ties. We've got lots of military, U.S. military, I shouldn't say lots. We have some that are in Singapore. So there's a pretty strong relationship. But on the other hand, you know, China is a huge financial partner. And then so as you look and as you, you know, as a country try to influence, you know, particularly behind the scenes, give me some details. How does that work? How are you thinking? How do you manage that?
Well, I think let's use one example, which is the Ukraine situation right now, you know, with America and Europe really looking at a lot of sanctions on Russia and on a lot of Russian equipment, particularly weapons. And we know we hear all the time, you know, NATO saying that China is supplying Russia with important parts, vital parts. And there is some suspicion that a lot of those parts moves through Singapore. So Singapore, the way we deal with things, like, this is probably something that I don't represent the Singapore government or my country when I say this, but I think Singapore really just tries to toe the line tries to stay neutral by allowing this trade to happen while kind of, you know, Singapore has also said that we support the sanctions on Russia. We have joined the list of countries that have stopped, you know, buying Russian goods, and we comply with whatever this, you know, U.S.-led sanctions mandate, essentially. But we kind of close one eye. That's something we say all the time. Like, we just, when something doesn't look exactly, it's a kind of a gray area, we might not necessarily look into it. And of course, we will deny this, like, all the, like, we'll never say this, right? But everybody kind of knows it. So I'm not bringing you any like official information here, but that's just kind of the how we as Singaporeans see it. Like when we hear sometimes that there are, you know, there's a businessman or very rich billionaire who is dumping so much of their money into our country, and you know, because there's very little tax, I don't think it's much of a shock to Singaporeans, because we know that this is it's basically a tax haven for a lot of people. And when you have a tax haven, it invites all sorts of characters, right? And so it's just so hard to tell exactly, you know, how Singapore polices a lot of this. There was after the COVID pandemic, there was a huge exodus of wealth from China, and a lot of it came to Singapore. And I know that the banks in Singapore were overwhelmed with the amount of family offices that were being set up here and the amount of wealth that was flowing in, and they couldn't regulate that wealth fast enough. There were huge like waiting lines and queues, and so I know that they do try to keep some sort of regulatory oversight, but for things, for example, like chips going to China or, you know, electronic parts going to Russia, Singapore can very easily say, or maybe they don't go to Russia, but maybe they go to India or another country, and then they go to Russia. Sure. It's very easy for Singapore to say, well, these are just electronic civilian parts that have, you know, they don't necessarily, they can be dual use. They don't necessarily have anything to do with the military, and they're not going to Russia, they're going to another country. So we kind of, it's a very cynical way of putting it, but we kind of just don't ask so many questions in terms of the financial aspect. But you brought up also, something I also need to bring up is we have 500,000 Chinese citizens living in our country. And in a country that has, there's 3.5 million Singaporean citizens, that's a really big chunk of our population. So that is another factor that we have to consider. A lot of them, they work across all levels. So some of them are construction workers, some of them are businessmen, some of them are business owners. So they really permeated our society, and it's, you know, this will be something that the Singapore government has to deal with if tensions start getting worse between the U.S. and China.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting you say that, because many people don't quite understand, you know, when we think about Europe, and for Americans, you know, we've historically tended to be Europe centric. And when we look at countries, we're like, well, why don't they do more? And why don't they have a bigger military, like Denmark, for example, or Iceland, or, you know, a number of European countries. But then when you really look at it, they're the size of one of our 10 largest cities in the U.S. I mean, they wouldn't even be, you know, Singapore wouldn't be a top 50 city in China. You know, it's actually quite small, but it, like you said, it plays an outsized role, and it does it quite well. So from your perspective, you know, you and I have talked in the past about China and China's ambitions. How do you see those ambitions, and how do you see them playing out? And then how is Singapore trying to maneuver itself to be best positioned within those ambitions?
Yeah, well, I don't have a lot of insight into how Singapore is navigating, you know, China's ambitions, but I can just briefly tell you what I think. And again, this does not represent the views of my country or my company. This is my personal views. I think if, for example, let's just theorize here. If, for example, Taiwan falls and, you know, relations between the U.S. and China have completely been cut off, Singapore is really the only passageway for China to reach Europe. If, let's say, it wants to trade with Europe or the Middle East and Africa, the other option really is to go through Myanmar, I think, from the Yunnan province, go down by land, and then you have an access point to through Burma to the Indian Ocean. But who knows what's going on with Myanmar now, right? I think China is probably really frustrated with what's happening there, because the situation is so unstable. It's trying to play both sides, I suppose, and see who wins. But it's just, there are a lot of question marks. So if, let's say, Taiwan falls, I would not be surprised if China starts looking towards Singapore. And it is definitely, we feel it. We feel, if you look out in Singapore, you will feel kind of Chinese influence starting to try to creep in. And the Singaporean government has actually come out to kind of say that they don't appreciate that. recently, I think last year or 2 years ago, there was a Singaporean man who was designated very publicly on state media, on our national media, as a person of foreign interest. So they were saying this person works very closely with foreign other countries, and we basically are marking him as someone who's compromised, to put it that way. And that was a warning, because there are a lot of Chinese associations. Remember, I told you there's a lot of cultural ties between mainland China and us. Like, a lot of people believe in the same religions. We have a lot of the same values. Some people, believe in their roots. So there are a lot of these Chinese clans and associations that have, I would say, probably been very heavily infiltrated. Infiltrated is a very strong term. But there's a lot of Chinese influence in those associations and clans, and they can have considerable weight over a lot of businesses, a lot of business owners. And so I think by announcing, so the person who was, I can't remember his name, but the man who was designated kind of as a foreign influenced person.
Foreign agent,
foreign agent was associated with those clans. So it was kind of like they didn't really do anything to him, but it was a warning to these associations that, hey, we're watching out, we're looking. And I do know, just hearing from sources on the ground that the Singapore government is very concerned about possible influence or political, election interference, for example, by the Chinese government. They are talking to a lot of stakeholders and business owners just to get an understanding of what the national security situation is like. So definitely, Singapore is not just going to take this lying down. We are moving toward, we're trying to respond. That's a good way to describe how Singapore often acts. Its strategy is to respond. So very rarely do we take preemptive action. Usually we're responding and reacting. We usually react and respond very well and efficiently and effectively, but we generally wait to see how things are going to play out, and then we make our move.
So it's that time in the show where we need to take a quick break. So we'll pause for this break. And when we come back, I want to ask you, talk to me about your perception of, Chinese ambitions. What do you think they want? Where does this road lead? Where does it end, and what, what satiates them? When are they happy? You're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and we're talking to Matt Lowe from Business Insider. So, Matt, I posed a question to you right before the break. Go ahead and kick us off with that.
Yeah, I think that what would satiate China is essentially to get free reign over whatever they want to do through our city. I don't think necessarily that they want to take over China the way that it's done with Hong Kong, or that, Xi Jinping aspires to do with Taiwan, but they will essentially prefer to get a free pass, right? And that will have very significant implications, I think. Number one, on our military, for example. Like, as I mentioned, we are very reliant on the U.S. military. So maybe, 30, 40 years down the future, if China gets what it wants, you'll start seeing more Chinese, maybe fighters, Chinese assets, weapons being used by our military instead. So that would be the scenario that I think China prefers. But of course, I don't think that is the popular scenario in Singapore.
So Matt, I was asking in terms of not just Singapore per se, but in terms of the region and then globally, how do you see China's ambitions and, what satisfies them? Do they just want Taiwan? Do they just want a free hand in the region? Are they looking to establish themselves as the Middle Kingdom and everybody sort of respects them and pays, obeisance? What exactly do you think they're looking for?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think, I personally, I do not think that China necessarily wants to be the number one power. I don't think it has aspirations to supersede the United States in that aspect. But I think it wants to grow as much as it can, as much as it wants, and it doesn't want to be inhibited by any other power. And because it doesn't really play with the rules of the international order all the time, I mean, sometimes it does, but generally, when we look at the way that it runs its own country and the way it interacts with countries that are a lot weaker than China, generally there's going to be resistance, right? So I think it's... I don't think I have much of a different perspective than what a lot of people in the U.S. think. But I do think that... I don't agree with, you know, people who might say that China wants to be the next middle kingdom of the entire world. I think that at this stage, it doesn't necessarily have that vision. Maybe eventually it might, if it's allowed to grow to a bigger stage, if it takes Taiwan, if it exerts authority over Japan and Korea, over Singapore. But at this stage, I think it just wants to continue to grow as much as possible. And that also comes against the backdrop of, you know, internally, the Chinese economy is not doing very well. If you hear what the people who fled China to Singapore have to say about what happened in the country, they're devastated by what happened during zero COVID. And they frequently say that they've lost faith in their government. And so that's why they've moved to Singapore or, you know, outside of China. And that is something that I think the government also has to keep, the government also keeps in mind when it thinks about its foreign policy, because what is a great way to unite your people, to have external threats and to have, you know, external goals to push out into, you know, Taiwan to fight against the US, for example. So that's something that I think we're quite concerned about in Singapore.
Yeah, it's a fair concern. And do you see, you know, we are NucleCast after all, so we talk about nuclear issues. As you and I have talked about this, and you've looked into this in substantive detail. Do you think that there's ever any risk that a potential conflict over Taiwan, let's say the Chinese make the decision to go, they want to take Taiwan back, the U.S. you know, intervenes to help defend Taiwan. Do you think there's any risk that that conflict could escalate to the, you know, to the use of nuclear weapons? And if you do, would it be the United States or the Chinese that used them first?
I think it would depend on who thinks they're losing, doesn't it? Because then you'd it's this sort of almost existential threat. I mean, for China, it wouldn't be an existential threat necessarily, but I think for Xi Jinping and the other leaders, they might be thinking, if they don't pull this off, this is going to be terrible for them. At the same time, that's what people said about Putin in Ukraine, but, I mean, he hasn't done anything of the sort. I don't think that, you know, China always says that it has a no-first-use policy, but when it comes to nuclear weapons, words can only go so far, right?
Sure. Now, it is that time in the show where I like to bring out Bob the Genie. So as I bring out Bob the Genie and I rub my magic lamp, of course, Bob grants three wishes to all guests, as long as they relate to the topics we've been discussing. So with that in mind, Matt, what is your first wish?
My first wish for like, Singapore?
For Singapore, for the region, how do you want this whole thing to play out?
Well, my first wish is for Singapore, is for our public to start learning how to educate themselves in the news and with politics and in geopolitics, because we do not have any of that foundation, partially because our media is very controlled. The controlled media is very, very controversial, I think. There are good things and bad things about it. We limit protests, for example. But what that means is that when our media hasn't caught up with what's being spread on social media, you have this terrible environment where I feel 60% or 70% of Singaporeans are getting their news from bad sources. And that makes us so susceptible to foreign interference. you could say from China maybe, or from some other place. There are a lot of levers to pull on the Singaporean public that could possibly influence our future elections. And if tensions, if the global order starts to continue breaking up and a lot of countries decide that they want to influence Singapore somehow, I think we are very fertile ground for interference. So that's my first wish. Do you want me to list the other two?
That's an interesting one. Yeah. That was an interesting one, though. I hadn't thought about Singaporeans being, you know, I would have assumed that Singaporeans were pretty well educated because, you know, as a city state that has to interact with so many different nations and is dependent on global trade, I would have assumed Singaporeans were pretty well, you know, well-read and, you know, understood sort of the global news far better than we Americans who are, you know, we live in our towns in middle America and we sort of go about our daily lives and we don't worry about what happens around the world because we don't really have to. I would have assumed Singaporeans were far more in tune with that than we are. But it seems you're saying sort of the opposite, that they too are enmeshed in their daily lives and focused on their daily lives.
I think that's the whole world. It's just that as a country, have not been trained to have very difficult conversations about foreign policy and geopolitics because we're very used to just focusing on what our media focuses on, our local media focuses on. And I'm not saying that's a terrible thing. I'm just saying that to prepare for the next few decades, we need to start thinking about changing up how we treat the media and social media, or else it could backfire, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Okay, so that's wish number one. How about wish number two?
Wish number two, I guess for Singapore, is that everybody stops fighting. Because when everybody stops fighting, we do very well. So if, you know, somehow, I have no idea how, you know, the U.S. and China decide, you know, there's some sort of magical solution, then, I mean, I don't know how Taiwan would feel about that, but it would be a huge relief for us, because we do have some domestic issues that we'll have to grapple with, like the aging crisis, our birth rates are plummeting, and, you know, the climate crisis, we're heating up very fast. These are certain things that we have to deal with, and we don't really want to have to deal with a lot of chaos and disorder happening outside of Singapore, because that's how we thrive, is through order and commerce, right? So that's, I mean, that's a almost impossible wish, I think. But I don't know, maybe one day.
Yeah, it's good to sort of get that perspective, you know, that, hey, Singapore wants stability. This, because you're a trading nation. So stability is sort of your bread and butter. Okay, so that's a good one. So that's number two. And then how about for your final wish?
Oh, boy. My final wish. Well, we talk a lot about nuclear weapons, right? And, you know, last year I had an article about how a lot of analysts feel like there's going to be, with China entering the nuclear, you know, production race, I suppose, there's going to be a huge question of when do we consider, what do we consider the new lines, you know, for nuclear deterrence and for nuclear treaties. I hope that China starts to become more open about what they're doing, because that really concerns me, that we're starting to have more and more power, centralized power in all of these big states, and at the same time growing nuclear power, offensive nuclear power in all three. It's, as a young person, I worry about it. I'm sure many people worry about this as well, but that would be one of my major, as a young person, that's one of my major fears, and I really hope that things work out somehow.
Yeah, I mean, Singapore, if war comes to, you know, Southeast Asia, you know, Singapore is going to be affected by it, and nuclear conflict would, you know, potentially affect Singapore as much, if not more, than a lot of countries around the world. So it's certainly an understandable concern. So those are three good wishes, and it sort of gives us, gives me and, you know, our audience a sense of where does a, you know, a sort of a very important country in the region, how are they thinking about some of these issues that we think about from sort of a much bigger strategic perspective in terms of, you know, American power around the world, that kind of thing. And we get a, you know, get a look into the region itself. So that's very useful and helpful. So thanks for coming on NucleCast to share your perspective and help the, you know, the NucleCast audience have a better understanding of, you know, Singapore and, you know, one of the key players in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on the podcast, Adam.
And of course, thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode of NucleCast. And we'll see you next time. You know, it's always good to get a perspective from somebody who's not an American, just to kind of get a sense of what are they concerned about. You know, so Singapore, you know, it's really important to the United States. I've spent a good bit of time there, worked with the Singaporeans, and, you know, they're an important partner, in, particularly in the region. So, you know, it's kind of good to see what do they care about, what do they think about, so that we, the United States, can do the best possible job of managing, you know, a positive relationship with an important country. So it was good to hear from Matt.
This has been a production of the Anwar Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.